And April 11th, a date that will for many live in infamy, Ecuador's President Lenin Moreno delivered from its embassy in London into the hands of the British government political asylee and WikiLeaks publisher Julian Assange. Miles of newsprint and terabytes of misinformation has been produced regarding Assange and the nature of the case manufactured against him, but at its heart are some basic facts vital for both his just treatment and the future fairness of the planet the rest of us will inhabit. Dr. Maximilian C. Forte is a scholar, educator, author, and creator of the Zero Anthropology Project, a Canadian anthropological approach to the study of empire and the human condition. Max Forte and Untying the Media Tangle to find a coherent explanation of what the Assange arrest says about the state of the empire and fate of democracy in the second half.
Listen to Guerrilla Radio every Thursday at 11 a.m. right here at CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria.
And when I come back, I'll be joined by Max C. Forte. We'll talk about empire, democracy, and Julian Assange. Stick around for that.
Long years ago, we made a tryst with destiny. Not fully or in full measure, but very substantially. At the stroke of the midnight hour, when the world sleeps,
ambitious men who time proved to be thieves. But years went by and nothing came. New flag, new name, same old game. Where the lucky laugh and the poor endure, having lost the will to fight again. Well, I remember when we were young and hope was strong, and we had waited long to hear the midnight bell that would dispel the edge that. Recall when we would bleed, cause we believed freedom was in reach of those who seized the day. But freedom came on, faded like a dream.
Sing out, shout out,
for the new day dawning. But it faded like a dream in the morning.
Sing out, shout out,
for the new day dawning. But it faded like a dream.
Sing out, shout out,
for the new day dawning. But it faded like a dream in the morning.
Sing out, shout out,
for the new day dawning. But it
Well, April 11th, a date that will live for many in infamy, Ecuador's President Lenin Moreno delivered from its embassy in London into the hands of the British government political asylee and WikiLeaks publisher Julian Assange. Miles of newsprint and terabytes of misinformation has been produced regarding Assange and the nature of the case manufactured against him, but at its heart are some basic facts vital for both his just treatment and the future fairness of the planet the rest of us have to inhabit. Dr. Maximilian C. Forte is a scholar, educator, author, and creator of the Zero Anthropology Project, a Canadian anthropological approach to the study of empire and the human condition. Its website is zeroanthropology.net. Max Forte teaches full-time in anthropology and sociology at Concordia University in Montreal and also publishes the New Imperialism series, which features research by students in his advanced seminar in the field and his own research. Max is too a past finalist for the Quebec Writers Federation Mavis Gallant Prize for Nonfiction, and his book titles include Ruins of Absence, Presence of Caribs, Post-Colonial Representations of Aboriginality in Trinidad and Tobago, and Slouching Towards CERT, NATO's War on Libya and Africa. Welcome to the program, Max.
Thank you for having me, Chris. It's a real pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure, of course. Now, Max, in your recent article, The WikiLeaks Case, Democracy Dies in Empire, you first attempt to tie together, quote, into one coherent explanation, the avalanche of news reports that have washed over the globe since the abduction of Julian Assange. Well, Max, I got to say, how's that going so far, and what does the Assange case tell us?
Well, it's a great deal, but really what's at stake, I think, I would have to say, is the meaning and reality of our citizenship. You know, to what does our citizenship actually amount? To what do we have a right as citizens? You know, how can we exercise citizenship in the absence of information and knowledge about our system of government, about those who presume to govern us? So what I think is at stake is the legitimacy also of the governing system, primarily the fact that it seems to have lost all legitimacy, and it knows it. And that puts us in a very dangerous phase, because we're dealing with states that are guilty of trying to conceal their crimes. And that is the real obstruction of justice that exists in Washington, not this stuff cooked up by the Democrats and the media and so forth that are designed more to distract people. For example, the obstruction of justice that we're dealing with, the one that has happened in the time that WikiLeaks has become prominent, begins with George W. Bush's administration plowing the U.S. into Iraq and Afghanistan, committing torture, committing war crimes, then covering up those crimes. That was followed by Obama's administration, which failed to prosecute Bush administration officials, committed even more war crimes itself, and cracked down on whistleblowers to an unprecedented level. And now we have Donald Trump maliciously turning on WikiLeaks after praising it endlessly during his electoral campaign. He's engaged in the final act of punishing those who reveal the truth. And that is really the only obstruction of justice that should concern us.
Well, and, you know, more than a Martin Niemöller moment, the, you know, first that came for the Jews, this idea that crimes that are left unaddressed, like those that you mentioned of George Bush, only magnify over the course of time until we get a creature like Mr. Trump and the kind of, well, who knows how far he's going to take his excess of authority.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what we're looking at right now, and we're already seeing the early signs of it. This isn't just, you know, hyperbole said for dramatic effect to stir up your listeners. But we're already seeing clear signs that the prosecution of Julian Assange is going to be a political prosecution, mm-hmm. which makes him a political prisoner. You see it, for example, in the way he was stripped of his right as an asylee in the Ecuadorian embassy. There was no review, no appeal. It was done as a kind of last-minute decision that it was announced. The procedures that exist under Ecuadorian law were not followed. He was just expelled. You can't also strip an asylee of their rights as an asylee just, you know, for political reasons. In addition, his citizenship was suspended, which actually has no meaning under the Ecuadorian constitution, according to those who've studied it. So that's step number one. Step number two, he's brought into a court in Britain to begin a hearing on having, you know, skipped a bail hearing. And the judge that confronts him, I believe his name is Michael Snow, one of the first things he says to Assange is that he's a narcissist.
Right.
You know, I mean, first of all, the judge is a judge, not a psychoanalyst. Secondly, as far as I know, that was the first time they had ever met. So even if you were a psychoanalyst, you don't jump to that conclusion, you know, the first thing you meet a person. Secondly, it's irrelevant to the trial. It's meant to personalize, demonize, and vilify. It's actually slander. But more than that, he then added, we now know, a line that was intended, I think, to somehow bait Julian Assange. He told Assange, listen, why don't you just go across to the U.S. now and get this case over and done with, and then you can get on with your life. Because, you know, the charge is a relatively minor one, this thing of having helped, presumably, Chelsea Manning to hack into another account on the computer. But we know full well that the United States has announced that there's an ongoing criminal investigation of Julian Assange, and that more charges are pending. Mm-hmm. So that once he arrives in the United States, a whole bunch of other charges that we haven't heard yet will materialize. And the judge knows this because he's not a stupid person. So it's a deliberate attempt to place Assange in jeopardy. For the past 2 weeks that he's been in jail, he's been denied access to his lawyers. That is only happening, I think, either today or tomorrow. For the first time, he'll be able to meet them. His case goes back to court next week on May 2nd. Mm-hmm. So not exactly a lot of time to prepare. He's being kept in isolation, he's denied contact with the outside world, and so forth. So there's already a great deal to be concerned about. I don't think it's going to be a fair trial, and I think we know that the outcome is already being predetermined.
Well, I spoke with John Helmer, a journalist who's done a lot of work in Russia over these over many long years at Dances with Bears. We were talking about the Assange case, and I had put forward that, well, maybe getting arrested, being taken out of the Ecuadorian embassy was a good thing in one sense for Assange, because he would get medical treatment, because there was medical and especially dental treatment that he couldn't get, and he was in very poor health. I said, well, he'll get that in Belmarsh, because the prison, the Britmo, as it's not so fondly referred to as well, I mean, because they are bound by law, one would expect, to provide the basics of life for the people that they incarcerate. That's an international norm. And yet, as you mentioned, not only was he being denied access from visitors and from his legal team, but also from medical personnel. We understand now that that's happening, and also it might have something to do with the fact that it's reported that the UN Special Rapporteur on Privacy is at the prison today visiting with Assange. He was scheduled to go visit him at the embassy in the days just following his abduction. What do you think, Max, this says about the British legal system? If they're willing to bend on things like providing the necessities of life to their prisoners, can Assange reasonably expect any kind of fair treatment in a British court when it comes to the extradition warrant against him?
Well, expectation is that it won't be a fair trial. It hasn't begun in a fair manner to begin with. It hasn't even begun in a professional manner from that point of view. I don't know what training is required to become a judge in the United Kingdom. You would have thought that it would be a serious amount of training, and we don't see that on display so far. But, you know, we already know something. That we know that the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention almost 3 years ago declared that the various forms of deprivation of liberty to which Julian Assange had been subjected constituted a form of arbitrary detention, mm-hmm. and that he should be released right now, or right then, I should say, and compensated. I mean, his rights as an asylum seeker have basically been violated. And this is at a time when in the United States a certain sector of public opinion is trying to make a lot of noise about the treatment of asylum seekers arriving on the U.S.'s southern border. Some of those same individuals turn around and refer to Assange as their property, mm-hmm. and they can't wait to get their hands on him to make him pay for Russian meddling in the 2016 election. So, you know, surrounded on all corners by the media, by governments, by politicians, even by supposed leftists, right. He's not really in a good situation, and I'm not as hopeful as I was even just a couple of weeks ago that there could be a positive outcome. I do agree with you that, you know, in theory, no longer being confined to the Ecuadorian embassy should have allowed him things such as access to health care and so forth. That staff of the embassy was treating him badly. That situation was really not sustainable forever, and it wasn't meant to be. But, I mean, he was meant to travel to Ecuador and take up residence there, and the UK did everything possible to deny him that.
Well, and in your article, and again, I've got it up at my website, guerrillaradioblogspot.com. You'd think I'd know it by now. and the article we're ostensibly talking about, the WikiLeaks case, Democracy Dies in Empire, that you have up at your site, zeroanthropology.net. It starts off with, a view. I mean, you're getting your news, as I do now, through RT, the Russian news station, or all news station, or Russian-sponsored anyway. But you talk about the kind of coverage Assange has gotten in the press. I mean, I would be amazed that the press could turn on one of its own the way it has. But then I remember in 2003 when the Palestine Hotel in Baghdad was shelled, killing a number of journalists, that it was obvious that they were targeted for being journalists, as other journalists were trying to cover that that invasion at the time, that no journalists seemed to stand forward and speak the outrage in that instance. Well, what's your take, though, on the media and its role in all and the pillaring of Assange?
Yeah, well, they certainly are complicit with the state. I was thinking of how Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, declared Assange, it was either last year or the year before, declared WikiLeaks, to be a non-state, right, hostile intelligence service. Well, the U.S. media, for the most part, is the opposite of that. It's a pro-state, very friendly, you might say counterintelligence service. In other words, they do everything possible to cover up the kinds of things that people like Chelsea Manning and Julian Assange have been making public, exposing war crimes and so on. For the most part, that's been true. There are occasional exceptions as well. But the media has certainly turned on Assange after having used him, just like Donald Trump turned on WikiLeaks after having found great value and great use in the materials that it was publishing. And there can be a lot of reasons for that. There can be nationalistic ones, driven by this sort of hysteria that exists in the United States and to some extent in Canada about, Russian meddling. The Russians are this big bogeyman now. And there's a nationalistic reason, seeing Assange as somehow being linked with the Russians as if he's, their agent, which he isn't. There are professional reasons, reasons of professional jealousy, mm-hmm, that WikiLeaks is making leaps and strides where they are not, and in fact, being able to publish these things because WikiLeaks empowered them to do so. So there's all sorts of, a lot of journalists in the United States also want to dispute whether Assange is a journalist.
Right.
And Assange is many things, it's true. He operates on many different platforms. There are many different facets to his work. He's a publisher, he's an analyst, he's an author of several books. And he also is a journalist in the sense that he documents and covers what was previously unknown, brings it to light for the public, contextualizes it, analyzes it, explains it. Some of the materials that WikiLeaks has been releasing is incredibly complicated, sometimes, technically complicated, like the CIA Vault 7 materials.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you go to WikiLeaks.org, you see articles for every release from Vault 7 being explained by Assange. This is what this material does. This is why it was created. This is how it can be used, and so forth. So there's no doubt that he does journalism. He doesn't work for a media house. That's the only thing that can be said. And that's, I don't think, a valid definition of journalism.
Well, he's a publisher, and nobody says the Washington Post doesn't do journalist because its owner, Jeff Bezos, its publisher, didn't go to Columbia. He's not a recognized journalist. But what about the idea, Max, and as we saw with the revelations of Britain's Integrity Initiative, that the press and the Washington Post has a long history of this, is intertwined with various intelligence agencies, both in this side of the Atlantic and the other.
Yeah, no, that's correct. And that's quite sad. It was the Washington Post which back in 2010 was outlining the size of the national security state in the United States, you know, how it ballooned to a proportion that most people can't even imagine. Something like 1,200 government organizations, 1,900 private companies working on counterterrorism programs, intelligence, and so on, in 10,000 locations across the U.S., employing around 900,000 people. So that's 1.5 times as many people who live in Washington, D.C. itself, who have top secret security clearances. The Washington Post gave us that information, but it's also the same Washington Post whose correspondent in Iraq, David Finkel, was embedded with the very unit, the very helicopter unit that we see featured in the collateral murder video that was released by WikiLeaks, that was aware of war crimes that were committed and covered them up, said absolutely nothing about them. We would not have known about it from a Washington Post correspondent who was on the scene. We only knew about it because Chelsea Manning released that material to WikiLeaks. So, it tells us a great deal about the state of our media and who you can really turn to for support as a citizen seeking information about the truth of your government's dealings that you pay for as a citizen and that are done in your name as a citizen.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Dr. Maximilian C. Forte. Max is a scholar, an educator, author, and creator of the Zero Anthropology Project. That's a Canadian anthropological approach to the study of empire and the human condition. You can find their website, zeroanthropology.net, where his work and the work of his collaborators is featured. And a great website it is too, Mac. Max, I'm looking at another article penned, Julian Assange, Political Prisoner, A Dark Day for Citizenship. You know, Max, I was just speaking with Susan Power in Ramallah and in Palestine, and she... She's a jurist, an international lawyer, and we were talking about basically impunity and the total abandonment by so many of international law. And in your article, you talk a little bit, in this article, A Dark Day for Citizenship, you talk about especially Theresa May's intoned statement that became the marching meme for the Tory party, nobody is above the law. What does that mean in this context where nobody, at least in power, seems to be obeying it?
No, that's exactly right. It's an empty statement, and I can't imagine there are many people in the UK who would have been impressed with it, because they know, a great many, if not the majority, know that is simply not true. If it were true, Tony Blair would be serving time in prison for war crimes, for taking Britain into a war against Iraq, a country that had never threatened Britain, that never attacked Britain, that possessed no weapons of mass destruction, that was not any kind of immediate threat. He lied. His intelligence services lied. The result of the war was hundreds of thousands killed, millions displaced. You know, if no one was above the law, Tony Blair would be in prison, and a great many others for that matter. That is just one example. So I think most people, at least intuitively, know not to take such statements seriously. We already know that they're not true, that there are different scales of justice for different classes in society. And it's a kind of disturbing statement. It's a very, very disturbing statement on another level. Assange exposed war crimes. Manning exposed war crimes. It's the legal duty of somebody like Manning to have exposed those war crimes. There are several manuals and documents in the U.S. Army that state strictly, you know, in very clear language, you're not required to follow an unlawful order. And if you see anything being done that is a violation of the law, it is your responsibility to make it known. To cover it up is an obstruction of justice. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine how anyone believes that Assange should be prosecuted for the act of exposing war crimes. As Ray McGovern put it recently, there is no good counter-argument to exposing war crimes. There's no good argument you can make against it.
Well, and this is why I suppose that the American government is so desperate to find some other legal hook to hang their case and hang Julian Assange by.
Yeah, absolutely. It wants the ability to commit actual war crimes, mm-hmm. and to have as a response from the public either silence or applause. Those are the only two permissible responses. What Assange has been doing is obviously the response that is not permitted, and they're going after him for it. And this is what the prosecution is. It's a political prosecution, and it tells us something about the society we live in North America, about the rule of law, about justice, about the nature of our citizenship, about freedom of speech, and so forth. And everybody ought to be paying attention,
right.
because it's not just Assange. It might be Assange today, but there are also other journalists that we, you know, you could be the target, Chris. I could be the target as an academic. All sorts of academics could be a target. When we're talking about freedom of speech and our rights as citizens that are imperiled by acts such as these, we all ought to be paying attention.
Well, it may sound corny, but yeah, we are all Julian Assange. You end your article, Max, not the one we've been talking about mostly, but the previous Julian Assange, political prisoner, a dark day for all of us. You end it by saying Assange will end his days as a free man, continuing his work, wealthy and celebrated. I hope that that's true for you. Do you still?
Me too, but since I've written that, I've become very pessimistic.
You changed your mind, yeah? Well,
yeah.
You know, I'll stick with that, Max, because I think that it may take longer to happen, but when we look at somebody like Nelson Mandela, I mean, I hope it doesn't take 27 years for Julian Assange, but I think that the truth will out, and justice, as Martin Luther King said, that the arc of justice, the arc of history bends towards justice. I'm hoping that that is the case here. Max, thanks a lot for coming on the show today. Again, Max's website, zeroanthropology.net. Thanks for coming on and talking to us, eh?
Oh, thank you very much. It was a great pleasure for me.
Well, until the next time. And I want to thank Susan Power and Janine Bancroft as well, and all the good people that keep the wheels spinning week in and week out up here. There's great programming coming, you know that. But that's all I've got for this week. Until the next time.
Times on an obituary lines, we offer our resistance with these humble rhymes. Sing out, shout out.